joining us now on the Meepo Toyota Hotline. Here's Ray Ferraro. What's up, Ray?
Ray Ferraro from the great Lower Mainland in Vancouver.
Nobody connects to the public better than Ole.
Yeah, man of the people.
Yesterday he's talking about the Lower Mainland in Vancouver, and then, you know, he's supporting those people in Western New York who are struggling with the Sabres.
The great people of Cheektowaga.
Cheektowaga.
They deserve better. And North Tonawanda. They deserve better.
I feel the sincerity from you here, man. That is just awesome.
Yeah. The Lower Mainland.
How about Hazy? He wrote me and said, get real, and people just started torching him. They were threatening his car, blowing up his car. They hated his guts.
I'm still getting it from people. Like, if I tweet about anything else,
they're like, shut up, Hayes.
Yeah, people from Buffalo. Like, someone wrote me last hour, said, you suck. I don't know how you're employed, and I don't even know what provoked it. Like, just me being on the air.
Just your face.
I hate your face.
I hate your face. Your face and your voice bother me, and you should be unemployed and a loser in life. That's, you know, it's very gratifying.
That's where you hand out that beautiful block button. You'll never see that person ever again.
Well, until he finds another burner account and starts.
And then you block him from there.
I guess so. Yeah, whatever.
Eventually those pigeons will go away.
Well, speaking of the Lower Mainland tonight, the Sedins, big night for them in Vancouver, getting their jerseys retired. And
what do you think around the table? They're getting their jersey retired. Hall of Famers?
I think they'll get in.
I think both will get in.
Yeah. But both?
Yes. Well, I think you almost have to put both in. Like, almost have to, because they're so connected.
But no disrespect here, Ray. Was it Henrik that was slightly better than Daniel?
Yes. Yeah, Henrik was slightly better. Daniel would have been more of the scorer than Henrik, who was the, you know, the centerman, the playmaker. But I would say Henrik was a little bit better. But if you look at their numbers, like, I know they played together all the time, but they're ridiculously close. The total points, the total games. I just saw this clip of something they did a few years ago, and it was kind of like a little quiz show they were doing for, you know, the local broadcast. And they asked him at one point in this tiebreaker, because, of course, they each got the same number of answers right, and they asked him, what's the total number of penalty minutes? And Henrik guessed something or other, and Daniel guessed something or other. Turns out they were, one was high and one was low. They were both 104 minutes off.
Really?
Like, even, like, you're like, it's like they had, like, they were in, I mean, they're twins, right? Like, but it's like they were so connected. They were so good. They were each Hart Trophy winners. I mean, I don't think there's really a vote to it. I mean, I think they're Hall of Famers for sure. And out in Vancouver, you know, there's certainly been nobody that's had the impact on this franchise like Daniel and Henrik have. I mean, Bure was brilliant, and Trevor Linden had, you know, a long-lasting impact, but. You know, it's literally, they're calling it Sedin Week. Like, it's like a week of games here. Three games, and tonight's the ceremony to, you know, you hear this lots, but two just really fantastic people that are, you know, that will get their numbers retired.
I swear, and I said this with respect on Vancouver Radio this afternoon, I swear the two of them talked telepathically. Like, you hear about these stories where twins can, like, almost know what each other's thinking.
Well, they certainly played like that.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, they knew exactly where each other was going to be on the ice. And I swear, like, they would be, like, over here, pass it back door, but not saying a word. And it would just arrive. Like, it was creepy. Well,
You know what was pretty cool to look at? If you pull up their, like, their stats, and, you know, they had kind of, they were just okay and learning the game in their first couple of years, and then there was the lockout, and they came out of the lockout, and remember the crackdown on obstruction happened in that first lockout. Out of that lockout, they just exploded. It was like the game changed at the right time for them. And so, like, we're seeing, you know, the lineage of that, of the rule changes that allow the players to play like they do today. And Henrik and Daniel were, you know, like, I was living out here then. They were clear recipients of a boost when the rules changed. And that's not to take anything away from them. They were playing a style of game that other people weren't. And then when the, you know, the ice opened up a little bit, they just started to shred people. It was impressive watching these guys for, you know, for well over a decade here.
And Hazy's in the content game. Wouldn't it be horrifying if, like, John Davidson and Lanny called him and they're like, Henrik, you're in the Hall of Fame. But just
Henrik. Oh, just one of them?
Just one of them.
And
eh?
Daniel would be like, oh. That would be horrifying.
That's why I think that you have to put them both in. Like,
well,
just
you know,
for the awkwardness
awesome
if, alone.
Just think if one of them got in and then the other one gave the speech and nobody knew.
Well, can you tell the difference between the two?
No. I can now. I couldn't. Like, when they were playing, no. I could. You'd see them, like, 20 feet apart, and you'd be like, oh, boy, I don't know them. And just go like, hey, buddy, how you doing? And move along, and then just hope that the other one doesn't come right behind you in case you've got the wrong guy. You always came up with the, hey, how's the family? Didn't really know who I was asking, but you'd get one of them.
Yeah.
They all had kids, right?
I really want to hear the news. I don't know which family you're talking about.
Yeah.
I wonder if they went back on their careers. You talk about rule changes, and if they would have gained any stats or lost any stats based on goaltender interference and the review process that we have in today's game. And last night was an extreme example in overtime. And Chychrun walked right down Main Street. He's got a bomb, too. Like, that
scored
was
in overtime the night before.
Yeah, the night
right,
before, yeah.
Right. And, like, what was your experience? You were ringside. Like, Campbell called it right away. And he didn't move, which I appreciate. He's like, I'm not leaving. Go review that, and let's keep playing.
Well, I mean, certainly live, I couldn't tell. I mean, you know, I'm 100 feet away, and I'm at ice level, so it's, you know, it's just kind of traffic-y. As soon as I saw the overhead, my thought was it wasn't the glove where Campbell made contact first. It was, Stepan's hip and body went right into Campbell. I'm like, I thought that one had to get called back. Now, I want the goals to count all the time, but I'm like, given we have this rule that it's here and it's not going anywhere, I thought that had to be called last night. And really, nobody kind of complained. Like, the Arizona guys, it was a few minutes, right? And then a couple of guys came over and looked at the monitor, and then usually the guys will ask, what do you think? But they just looked and turned and skated away. And to me, that they knew.
Even Brad Richardson after the game was like, yeah, that's the right call.
Well, how about Rick Tocchet going conspiracy theorist after the game?
Yeah, it's in Toronto, and we're playing Toronto, so, you know, how it goes.
Like, what was that? Was like an Alex Jones conspiracy theory. And, like, he was sour. They're in a race out there, but it's not like...
They reviewed it in Toronto, and we're playing Toronto.
It's like Wendell Clark's making the call for the game.
Yeah. You know what could have helped Arizona last night is if Kessel would have broken a sweat.
Did you see Phil?
That was embarrassing.
He took an eight-second shift in overtime.
Did you see him get over the boards, though, to go to the room?
No, I didn't.
I'm so mad I didn't capture it, because I went back. I was rewinding it, and I'm like, I should take the video and send it to the boys here. Like, it was honestly, like, if you've ever been to Pier 37 in San Francisco, the sea lions are like he got himself on top. Stalled for a second and then just rolled over the top.
I said to the boys last night, I'm like, he is managing to look out of shape on a 4-on-3. Four.
Right.
He was just dying out there. I'm like, 4-on-3, you just kind of stand around and zip it around. He was dying out there.
Yeah. He didn't get much.
So they make that deal for him, and they're maybe he can give us, you know, we'll get some pop to our offense. He's got 12 goals. I can't remember one play he was dangerous last night.
No.
Like, not one. And that's, like, here they are hanging around the playoff race, and they've got, like, you know, the guys that they count on or supposed to count on for offense, they get nothing from. Like, Schmaltz has had a brutal year.
Oof.
Keller has signed him to a long extension, 7-8 years, and he's given them nothing. Hinostroza, I think, is one goal in 35 games. And then Kessel's got 12 goals. And I'm like, man, they just can't quite get it. They can't quite get it right because they're right there. Like, don't need much from those guys because they play so well defensive. Like, I was surprised. They're fast.
Yeah.
Like, they cover the ice, man. They're in the way. They make it hard, and you know, to get lots of chances against them. And if they could just score a little bit, like, not a lot, just a little bit.
They had more chances shorthanded.
Yeah.
Like, I think they had three chances shorthanded. Like, yeah, two-on-ones, and, like, the one Campbell's looking right, and the puck goes left. Was that shorthanded, or that was even strength with about 7 minutes left, the two-on-one?
I think that was even strength.
Yeah.
Yes, it hit him in the elbow and then ended up somehow through his leg.
Between his legs, and he pivoted. Like, I don't know how that didn't hit his legs and go in the net, too. He actually turned. It ended up, I mean, when things are going well, you get that bounce. If he's having a tough go, that hits his leg and goes in the net or bounces down.
Well, you know, you mentioned this after the game last night, that for the first time since Freddie Anderson's been here, maybe there's a bit of a competition behind him. Like, when Freddie comes back,
get his ass in gear to say, oh, maybe it's time for me to go back in there and play.
Yeah. I mean, are we putting the cart before the horse, or, you know, like Campbell, like, it's Freddie's net. If he's playing, but Campbell's young, he's on term, you know, like, if he's playing.
See, I don't think I don't even think with all respect, I don't think it's even comparable.
No, it's not, like, but it might get his attention to say, okay.
He's younger. It's not a 37-year-old McElhinney.
Right.
Or
the only thing I could say is if there was if Campbell's in a groove, like, say Freddie doesn't play tomorrow, and Campbell gets into a groove and is picking up points, all it does is it gives you confidence that you got a guy that you can throw in there, that if you... maybe if you didn't trust what was going on, you're like, I got to double up the goaltender. Or, you know what, Freddie's got to play four games this week. But now if Campbell's playing well and has gained some confidence, you're like, oh, I can put Campbell there. I can space it out. That's what a good backup does.
I like the competition element of it, where it's like, okay, I want my net back. And I want to start playing good. And I want the chitter chatter about me. Like, I'm ready to do it.
Yeah, that's more of a platoon system, but I know what you're saying. Like, Joel Quenneville is not shy to do that. He used to do that all the time.
Done,
like,
in Florida,
he did
too.
In the playoffs to Crawford.
Right. Well, look at what happened in Washington a couple of years ago.
Yeah, Grubauer and Holtby.
Right. And Holtby was Holtby at that point.
Exactly.
Both teams won the Stanley Cup, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
you're right.
I mean, we'll see. But
Well, put it this way, he's more than a viable option in goal to play. Like, they were the second that shot in New York went through Hutchinson's legs, that deal was done.
The fourth goal, yeah.
Yeah, they're like, okay, you're like, I don't know when they agreed to the deal, but, like, in my mind, the puck went through his legs. They're like, okay, this can't wait anymore. And so, yeah, Campbell gave up the second goal last night. I'm not real sure what he was doing there. You know, he wasn't in a butterfly. He was just kind of, like, down on his knees looking for nickels. And the puck went right in the middle of the net. But I don't even care. I'm like, man, he made some saves that the other guys couldn't make or didn't make.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're in way better hands, of course, with him there.
Yeah, and I thought those kids got exposed a little bit on the back end last night.
Lilligren and Sandin?
Yeah. Well, they were out on that goal. I don't know if they should have been out in the final minute. You talked about it on the panel.
But Matthews is the one that choked it away.
Right. You're right. Matthews got to be a little better.
Matthews was really sloppy.
How about knock somebody on
your ass? You can't go up to the kid.
Though.
You can go up to the kids and say, what the hell were you doing out there? But then they can say, well, what the hell was Matthews doing in front of the net?
You're right. My whole point is I know the league is skate by and stick check, but when's the last time you've seen a guy get his ass or knocked on his ass in front of the net?
Not happening.
In a loose puck battle.
Doesn't happen here very often.
Like, I know that's sounding a little bit bullish, but there's going to be some loose puck battles where you're going to want somebody. I know Jake Muzzin would at least try to be physical in that scenario, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I kind of like those two. I like the look of them together. This all might be a little bit much for them as they get into the last 20 games of the year, and that's okay too.
Yeah.
Depending on what the rest of the defense looks like. I mean, if they're going to start leaning on them heavier and heavier, then, you know, I think it's a little bit of deep water for them. But they look like they're both going to be on the team next year. And I can easily sort of in my mind's eye project them forward as competent NHL guys as a 20 and a 21-year-old.
Yeah,
I look at them. And I'm like, man, they can move the puck. They can skate. They can get their feet wet for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was the first time I looked at Lilligren, and I looked at him as I viewed him as an NHL player.
Yeah,
every time before I was like, not ready, not ready. I don't know if he's ever going to be ready, not ready, not ready. And I was like, yeah, that guy looks like an NHL player.
He's taking a big step.
He'll be fine. It's just my whole point is exactly what Ray's saying too. Like you're being forced to use these guys in areas maybe where, you know, we'll see if they sink or swim. Like fine against Arizona, but how's that going to go in Tampa and in Florida? And you're in this division battle. And you got to make sure to protect them. Like, that's my thing. And they're going to be fine.
And that's on the coaches, too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's the coach in the organization that has to make sure that they be placed into situations that have success. It's not on them.
What do you make of Pierre Engvall, who he got a two-year, $1.25 million extension. So he's locked in for the next couple of years. For me, I don't know if he can play center in the NHL yet. I think that's undetermined. I think if he can, then you've really got yourself an asset. If he can play multiple positions, he can skate, kill penalties, might be a textbook fourth-line center.
Swiss Army knife, they call it.
Right. What do you make of him, Ray?
I kind of like him. I think he hit a wall here. Like he was playing really well. He had 7 goals and like in the early 20 number of games, 23, 24 games, and he looks like he's hit a wall a little bit. I don't know if he's a center or a winger. I don't know if he's a third or a fourth liner, but he's an NHL player.
No question.
And so I liked it. When I saw that, I was like, that's a good contract. It's a good contract for Engvall, and it's a good contract for the Leafs. Like, the dollar figures will allow them to plug in a guy that they can afford to kill penalties, who's fast, who, if he's got 7 goals already, like, couldn't he be a 15-goal scorer? Sure, why not? Man, that's pretty good stuff for 1.25.
Yep, give him a couple years of term. I don't think it's an overpayment, at 1.25, but every dollar counts, you know. And it's not like he's been established in the league, but if you feel like he's going to be a guy that is going to play for you, I think it makes sense. And we got the Seattle expansion in a couple of years as well. I mean, you're going to have to expose some players, and he might be one of them. Anyway, we'll see. Enjoy it out there tonight, buddy. We'll do it again tomorrow at 5.
Talk to you then. Later, boys.
There he is, Ray Ferraro, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. It's time to Toyota. Fall in love with your car again with rates as low as 0% at Maple Toyota, right next to Canada's Wonderland.